What's going on, guys? I'm Johnny Anthony. If you're hearing this, you are now listening to one of the hottest and newest podcasts on Spotify and in the podcast market today, Chair Shot Sports. In the big chair today, so let's get in the car, hit the ignition, hit the road, and let's get to work. What's going on, everybody? I'm John Anthony. You're listening to Chair Shot Sports. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's just me here in the big seat. Unfortunately, it'll just be me riding solo for this episode. The mic has some other Hollywood and theatrical engagements that he needs to attend to. So we wish him all the best in his endeavors with that for now. Hopefully, he'll be back next week or the week after that. So for now, it's just you and me talking about wrestling, talking about sports, talking about the week that was. The couple weeks that were. It's been a little bit since we've gotten together. So we have a lot to cover. So one of the biggest things we talked about our last episode was WWE Extreme Rules. It was one of the bigger pay-per-views that they had coming up because it was finally their time to shine and compete and go against whatever AEW was giving out with their pay-per-views and their weekly shows. So it was a good card. Good card, not going to lie. It was better than expected. I'll give them that much. It wasn't a five-star, but it was close. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it was definitely in between. So if we want to go just starting from the top and working our way down to the bottom, one of the first matches we had was Liv Morgan and Carmella. Great match. We talked about this last episode. Liv Morgan, definitely her time to shine. Carmella, always doing what she does, always staying relevant, being out there, being a face, being relevant in the division. But Liv Morgan really needed this win to really catapult herself into the quote-unquote upper echelon of being in the women's division. And she got that win, which was great. It was a great match. Good back and forth in between. And Liv Morgan coming out on top was awesome. Really enjoyed it. Definitely a well-deserved win. I definitely liked it. And it's definitely going to do well for her career moving forward, too, especially with the Queen's Crown tournament coming up and things like that. It's definitely something she needed and definitely something that'll pay off for her down the long in the long run. One of the next matches was Lashley, AJ, and Omos. They were going against the New Day. Good match. Good match. I feel like it's something that they kind of took and they threw together. They kind of just was like, oh, hey, Bobby, get with this random tag team and let's put you together because you guys are a bunch of heels and let's put you against the New Day. And everyone's brother knew that the New Day, with Big E being the new WWE heavyweight champion, was going to be going over. And speaking that in spades was obviously Big E hitting the big ending, pinning him down 1-2-3, getting the win for the team. Which is great. The one thing I love is, like, no matter where you put Big E, wherever you put Xavier, wherever you put Kofi, them as a tag team, they're always going to find the ways back to each other, which is awesome. I love it. I'm pretty sure the rest of the WWE Universe loves it. It's always great to see them guys together. They have amazing chemistry. They have for years and years and years, ever since they were kind of hodgepodge thrown together as guys who have nothing really to do. We have nothing really for them if you're creative. And they went ahead and they've made that group probably one of the most prolific, talked about, and successful groups in a long, long, long time on sports entertainment. So it's good to see them go over. New Day gets the win on that one. Down the road, coming up next is the Usos versus the Street Profits. I called this last episode. This match was everything you wanted more if you liked high-flying, tactical, just kind of wrestling in itself in the ring. These four guys know how to get at it, go at each other, and whether it's inside the ring, outside the ring, or flipping outside the ring from inside the ring, these teams have it. Great match. I personally had the Street Profits going over on this. I really thought it was one of those times where they were getting drafted, could have stolen the titles and ran away to the other brand, but with the Usos going over, totally makes sense. They definitely earned it. With them with Roman, that storyline is something that bloodline can probably run for a good another 6 to 8 months. Even if Roman were to lose that belt, the Usos could definitely keep those tag belts, go on a run and be the quote-unquote protectors for Roman, help him get that belt back, which is probably where I see that the storyline going, because Numerous reports have been out. They've been talking about, obviously, The Rock was supposed to be at SummerSlam. I'm sorry, Survivor Series this year. It was the 25th anniversary of when The Rock debuted at Survivor Series. And then me and the Mike have talked about this episode after episode after episode where we do not agree. He thinks every month that Roman's just going to be donkeying the title up. I've been telling him that I'm pretty sure he's going to be holding this on until Dwayne comes back, goes on his last run in WWE before getting inducted and kind of going on that Legends role and kind of doing his own thing, whether it be, you know, president or making 400 more movies, whatever it is. So, but right now what they're saying is the plans is WWE is moving away from this year's WrestleMania and focusing on next year's WrestleMania in 2023 in LA, which if I couldn't tell you right now, I really can't spell what that means for the Universal Championship. I mean, Roman holding on to it until then would be something that would be astronomical and something not seen in a long, 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 long time, since going all the way back to like Hogan, Sammartino, where a champion holds a belt for 1 or 2 years, defending all the time and still holding onto that belt. So that's something that's kind of out of the ordinary, would be a taboo and something that would be extraordinarily surprising to a lot of WWE fans. Though it might be the one thing that keeps people intrigued, a la the Goldberg streak. So if you have Roman either defending on SmackDown or on pay-per-views, it's almost like one of those things where, and any wrestler who's had the belt, once they become champion, anyone will tell you that what sells is not you being the champion, but chasing the championship is what sells and brings people in to the story. I guess I'm watching this and guess I'm watching into invested in what's going on. So one of the biggest things is Roman having this belt. I feel like people are tuning in weekly, monthly, to whether it be SmackDown or on a monthly pay-per-view, wherever it is, to see if he's actually, this is the time he's going to drop it. And then once he's sitting in the middle of the ring, holding it over his head, Who's a jabroni coming down the aisle now? What legend, what wrestler, what person is going to go down that ramp and challenge him to the next program? I feel like that's kind of the way WWE has done this. They did it with Edge. They did it with Cesaro. They've done it with Cena. They did it with Brock. So I have him going over on Brock at Crown Jewel. We'll talk a little bit more about the Crown Jewel card in a little bit. But if he goes over at Crown Jewel, like who with The Rock not coming out of Survivor Series, it really is. I would imagine it would. If I had to put my money on it, if I had to bet, if I was a betting man, I would have to bet that the person that's going to come down the ramp, once he puts the 1-2-3 on Brock, is going to be McIntyre. I think McIntyre did an amazing job carrying that torch and carrying that belt through the Thunderdome pandemic era. Honestly, I'm not just saying that. Like, I think Drew, that was Drew's time to shine. He did a great job. He carried the company banner. But I feel like with him being drafted to SmackDown, the only place they really have him go is toward Roman. I can't see them taking Drew and saying, hey, why don't you go into a program for the IC title? Or maybe go get yourself a partner and go for the tag titles and go maybe, unseat the Usos. There's only one place Drew's going. That's going to be against Roman, going for that belt, going to the Royal Rumble, heading into WrestleMania season. So, anyway, I digress. We'll talk a little bit more about Crown Jewel in a little bit. Another match that happened after that was we have Alexa versus Charlotte. This match was a no-brainer. Alexa, again, the mic, one of his favorite wrestlers, has talked about how great she's been on the mic, how great she's gotten in the ring, and I do not disagree at all. This new character development for her, I think, has given her more ways of being unique, opening up a little bit more, and just being more, I guess, herself. The Twisted Bliss side of Alexa Bliss was great, but it was just a natural heel. You couldn't really get her over as a face once she took on this persona. If you want to say she stole from Bray, I guess you could. She definitely took a sample piece of it, making it Alexa's playground and things like that. But I think it's definitely given her a little more creative freedom to kind of be what she wants to be and do what she wants to do when she goes out there, whether it be in a promo, in the middle of the ring, or talking or facing another wrestler. But in this match, Charlotte was the winner. going over, retaining her belt, hitting the natural selection, getting the 1-2-3. That was something I really didn't see not happening. Alexa, I feel like Charlotte isn't the one she's going to win it from. Charlotte, one, probably wouldn't allow it. Two, Charlotte has her own deals right now with the draft and Becky going to Raw, her going to SmackDown, this whole deal with the belts. And I'm sure that's a whole conundrum we'll have to figure out in the next upcoming week. So Alexa really wasn't going to be part of any of that. But it was a really good match, needless to say. Some big spots from both ladies, which was awesome. Good to see. But Charlotte going over was what happened. So next match, we had Sheamus going against Damian Priest. And pleasantly, Jeff Hardy getting thrown in. I really thought, I talked about it last episode, I really thought Jeff Hardy, this was his time to take this belt and run and go over to SmackDown. So when I saw he was drafted, I really thought it would have been more apropos for him to have that U.S. title. He did leave a couple little apple seeds, little breadcrumbs about maybe going over to the Willow gimmick. If that is the case, and he goes over to SmackDown with that, you're looking at literally, you're looking at one of your top heels is going to be Roman Reigns, your top face is going to be Willow. That probably might be one of the better moves for WWE and Vince to pull the trigger on right now. Raw's Raw, man. If you watch it, I don't need to sit here and tell you how bad it is. Creative is struggling there. I don't know who's in charge of it or who they need to get in charge of it, but it is not where it needs to be, where it was probably a year or two ago. A year or two ago, it wasn't the best, but it was better than what it is right now. I kind of feel bad for guys like Lashley that are over there kind of just like floating water and kind of just carrying the pack. But to Willow, to just pop up on SmackDown, you're looking at a top face and someone who could probably go all the way to the top. Whether or not it be Roman, that could be someone that takes the belt off of Roman. I know it's out there, it's outlandish, a little out there, a little out on a limb. But could you imagine Jeff Hardy pops out as Willow, challenges Reigns within the next... I mean, you're talking, I mean, at this point, we're almost in November, so... I mean, this would be something that would happen over time. Either Willow wins a Rumble or has a good showing at the Rumble, makes his way, and you're maybe right after WrestleMania, whatever Roman does, you're talking that next programming, the Backlash or Payback. You're looking at like Willow coming out of the woodwork and just taking down Reigns. And then I'm pretty sure you could say that the Reigns would skyrocket with Willow having that championship belt. I think it would be amazing. A great call to arms as far as old wrestlers and quote unquote, as AEW likes to call them, wrestling fans. You're going to pull a lot of TNA guys in, a lot of Impact people in, a lot of Ring of Honor people are going to come in too if they see Willow out there, especially if he has the top prize on that brand. We also had Bianca, Becky Lynch going head to head for the Women's Championship. This match really didn't do it for me. I knew it wasn't going to be a long-winded match. But it was definitely, they hit some big little spots. Oxymoron for you. Some big little spots in the match here and there. A lot of false pins. A lot of 1-2s. And then I had no idea. I mean, that Sasha was even going to be making an appearance. So with Sasha busted in, setting up the DQ and just hitting the knocking him back with the backbreaker. It was nice to see. It was good to see. It was good for her to make a return with that. I think right now the women's division on both shows is convoluted. The draft hasn't hurt, but neither has it helped either. A la Bray Wyatt. they really haven't done any justice for either brand with the women's division. You've made a lot of changes, you've swapped the belts, but now you've added kind of a little more confusion to everything. So are the after Crown Jewel, so are the belts just going to magically appear on the other females that are there? Like, are we going to do this weird thing where we show up on SmackDown with a red belt and vice versa, on Raw with a blue belt? Just doesn't really seem good for business. It kind of confuses the fans. No one knows what's going on. The casual fan sees that and they're like, what's going on? What's the storyline? There is none, unfortunately. So hopefully they figure all that out in the next 7 to 10 days, figure all that out before SmackDown goes live with the Crown Jewel. So the big main event was Roman Reigns versus Finn Balor, the Demon. This match actually got me really going. I thought it might have been that one match, that one swerve, where Vin comes out and he wins it. I'm not saying he needs interference or any help like that. I mean, obviously being an extreme rules, quote unquote, no DQ, you knew the Usos were going to get involved. You knew that was going to happen. Definitely weird with the red light and the music going. Kind of weird. I would like to know what that music was covering for. Obviously, I understand someone got up and had to cut the rope for him to fall. There was a lot of Bray Wyatt Fiend undertones with that whole scenario and that whole like skit. I would like to think that maybe it has something to do with him, but unfortunately, it probably doesn't, which sucks for me, you, and everybody else who's a WWE fan. But I really thought that was one of those points where Vin's going to go over using Supernatural, whatever else he was going to use. When the rope going down and Roman just hitting the spear, hitting the 1-2-3, it was kind of, you know, business as usual. What you really thought was going to happen. No real swerves at this pay-per-view. So, really everything planned out the way I thought it would. Nothing major changes any hands. Kind of just a really nice, hey, we're going to put some people up against the champions, but they're not going to lose them anyway kind of pay-per-view. But for what it's worth, the matches were good. Everything else that supported that was good. So I got to say, out of a 5 stars pay-per-view, I'd have to give it 3.5 at most. I think if the Reigns Balor match ended a little differently, but you know what? It wasn't even a matter of Balor winning clean. It was just a matter of like Reigns or Balor hitting their finishers without ropes being broken, weird smoke piping out of the turnbuckle. Lights everywhere, people cutting ropes, all that other stuff. I think if it wasn't for any of that, I could definitely give it a 4. And also people like insult. Also the WWE insulting the universe's intelligence, thinking we didn't see someone cut that rope, so Finn had to fall. So that you also lose half a star when that happens. So that was that. That was the latest WWE pay per view Extreme Rules. Really can't complain about it. It was good. It was what it was. Really set up Crown Jewel. I really think they're just trying to get into Survivor Series and turn the corner, getting into Day 1 in Atlanta and hitting the road with the Royal Rumble and the road to WrestleMania. I really think that's really trying to get right now in 2022. So with Extreme Rules on a Sunday night, speaking of Sunday nights, one of the biggest things going on right now, the NFL. There are so many surprises, either winning or losing. A lot of winners, a lot of losers. Right now, I feel like AFC, NFC is really up for grabs. A lot of guys you thought would be at the top or at the bottom and vice versa. So it's definitely a lot of information and a lot of moving parts going on moving into week 5 and week 6 of the NFL season. So with that being said, we will take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the weeks that were and the weeks that are coming up. Hey guys, what's going on? John Anthony back here with Chair Shot Sports, riding solo in the big chair with the mic out with some contractual Hollywood and theatrical engagements. Not able to join us this week for our weekly episode, but we're still here talking about wrestling, talking about the NFL, talking about everything going on in sports right now in New England and also throughout the entire country. So with that said, we just got done talking about WWE Extreme Rules. One of the other great things that come on Sundays, football. Football all day, every day, loving it. Sundays, Mondays, Thursdays. Wait till the fall comes and we get closer to the playoffs. We'll have Saturdays too. It's great. The past couple weeks have been crazy with the NFL. A lot of teams that are up should be down. A lot of ones that should be down are up. If you look in the AFC, you have the Chiefs that are probably one block punt away from being winless. Look over to the opposite side of the country, look over to California, look at the Las Vegas Raiders. They're kind of blowing the world up. No one really suspected them to be, you know, this good, being 4-1. But it's something that's definitely a long time coming. Staying on the West Coast, you look at a team like the Niners, who their defense is supposed to be a sticking point, knocking guys in the mouth, and having Jimmy G and the number 3 overall pick, Trey Lance, as a 1-2-headed monster at quarterback. Right now, they can't put a quarterback out on the field that can stay healthy, and the defense hasn't exactly been up to snuff in following any kind of projections that have been given forth in the preseason, and especially this season. And also, staying in the NFC, Dallas has finally looked like that team who are them boys out there coming to fruition, making the prophecy real, and being relevant and being nice moving into the next couple weeks of the NFL. One of the biggest things right now in the NFL going on, besides Urban Meyer, I really want to talk about everything that's going on right now with Jon Gruden. It's been everywhere on Facebook. It's been in social media. You've probably seen everywhere. You've probably seen your emails on TV, SportsCenter, whatever you turn on. It's been there. It's really an unfortunate situation. And when I say unfortunate, I'm not saying it's unfortunate in a way where it sucks that these emails were seen and Jon Gruden got exposed for what he was. It's really just, it's unfortunate because someone of Jon Gruden's stature, coaching as long as he has, being so successful with when he was in Tampa Bay, getting the gig with Las Vegas, finally turning this franchise around, going to a new city, getting a new stadium, and finally being able to have a winning product on this field, just for your dirty skeletons to come flying out of the closet and expose you for what you are. And by no means is myself, Chairshot Sports, or anybody here condone anything that was said on the emails. Because I'll tell you that right now, any of the homophobic, misogynistic, and racist, any undertones of any of those emails are not supported by anybody, myself or anyone here. I think it's just one of those things where I feel like he's not the only one. He really isn't. He can't be the only person that had these emails. Out of 650,000 emails that were uncovered during all of the Washington football team investigations and their trials and things like that, you're telling me all we found were a couple hundred emails from Jon Gruden just saying a couple things? Now, I don't say a couple things lightly, but I'm saying in the scheme of things, he's the only guy you found saying anything? It just really stinks if it's one of those things where this guy gets outed for things that he said and his feelings and whether those are his true beliefs down to his core or not, or whether, as he claims, he was upset and mad in the moment and wrote what he wrote and still sent it out. The way I look at it is when I send emails, email stands for evidence mail. That's what that is. If you're sending any kind of email to anybody, whether it be your friends, family, your work, anybody, that stuff is out there. It lives there. It can get archived. It lives in an inbox, just waiting for someone to find it. Jon Gruden's world's kind of crashing down all around him. If you're him, it sucks. He literally just got done building a $11.4 million home in Las Vegas, which is kind of funny. He was right across the street from Derek Carr. They were neighbors. So that house is already paid for, obviously, but that one's probably going to go on the market soon. Now he doesn't have a job anywhere in Las Vegas. Also, it came out a couple days ago that he's going to be taken down of the Ring of Honor at Raymond J. Stadium for Tampa Bay. He's going to be coming down from the Ring of Honor. So that's another shout to his name. I honestly think if you're Gruden, you know what you said, you feel how you feel. We can't sit here and say if we know how this is exactly how he feels, if these are true 100% feelings and just deep down beliefs, or if it was something that was said in the heat of the moment. The funny thing is, it doesn't say who these emails were to. It doesn't tell you if it was to the players union, if it was to his best friend Steve, if it was to his mom. Nobody tells you that. It really just emails that were sent by one Jon Gruden. And again, not excusing one iota of anything that was said. I'm saying you have to take everything in context. Okay, just like when I get done with this, you'll see the context I'm going to go to after this. So if he was saying it to a member of the NFLPA, jokes about the head of the NFLPA should not be made. Obviously, some racist undertones with those kind of jokes. Referencing lips as Michelin tires, really not a good look, not the best way to go. Misogynistic also emails of talking about, female coaches and things like that. And then also making, these off-color comments about homosexuals, and being anti-gay. And then you literally have one of the first gay players coming out on the Las Vegas Raiders. It just doesn't make sense. It's either really a hard place for John Gruden to be, or it was something he said in the moment and honestly embraces all these people. Of course, nowadays in 2021 with cancel culture and the way everyone operates, he really doesn't get a fair shake. Not that he deserves one, but even if he did have an explanation for everything, no one would really listen, nor would neither anyone really care. But yeah, it's just a rough time for the NFL. As much as the strides they made in all of last year, moving forward to this year, and then these things that come out, I mean, it's kind of much as those that ugly monster head rearing its ugly head, and really just casting a really bad light on the NFL, the coaches themselves, and everything in general. I mean, if I'm John Gruden, you know what you said, you know what you feel, you know deep down in your soul, in your guts, what you are and who you are as a person. If you're John, you ever want to make a comeback, I mean, you're talking sensitivity training. You're going to have to go the Michael Vick route. You're going to have to come out and just advocate for all of these groups, and just kind of be a figurehead for a lot of different people, a lot of different places, before you even think of getting some kind of ownership or being in command of some kind of squad of players. If he goes all the way back to the college level as like an offensive coordinator's assistant, I would not be shocked in the least. That's kind of the route that he's going, and kind of the route he has to go to, quote unquote, pay the dues to get his way back up into the good graces of the public eye and also the NFL. Because him getting reinstated, not that he's ever been not like blackballed or kicked out, but for him to take an actual coaching job, to walk into an owner's office and having to deal with this on your resume and dealing with this kind of scandal and outlet and backlash, I mean, that's pretty ballsy to walk into up to an owner and tell him, "Yeah, I'm good. Don't worry about it. I talked about this club and I did some training, so I'm good." You're talking years before you even hear about John Gruden being anywhere near a coaching staff or sniffing a job in either college or the NFL. But it's unfortunate, and it's one of those things where you kind of get a glimpse into how people really feel. And I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that I hope that Gruden is in the minority and not the majority. They've called for all 650,000 emails to be released. Probably is not going to happen, which one kind of tells me that's kind of a red flag in itself, not releasing everything. What other emails are out there? What's seen that's not that bad? What's out there that's not being seen? That should be at least have a look at. I really think that's everyone's right. That's the public's right. If we're going to chastise someone like Gruden, take him down, cancel him and take him down the wormhole, I think any other coach or anyone else, any other owners or anybody else that's part or in running a team should definitely be held accountable as well. So, well, my thoughts and prayers go out to John Gruden and his family, not for the fact of for what he said, for the fact that he can find some forgiveness and he can find himself back on the right path and hopefully, right his wrongs and find his way back to the NFL coaching division. So you got wrestling, you got football. Unless you're under a rock, MLB playoffs have been rocking. They've been awesome. The Boston Red Sox took out the Tampa Bay Rays. The 100-win first place team that won the AL East took them out in 3-1, heading over to the ALCS against the Houston Astros. If you look over at the NLCS, you got the Dodgers and the Braves. If you ask me, it's looking like one of those things where you get the Dodgers and the Sox matching up one more time to go toe-to-toe, throwing blows for 12 rounds to see who's going to take home the World Series ring. So with that being said, now we've covered football. We've talked about some wrestling. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Red Sox, how they got to this position in the ALCS and what they got to do to win it. We'll talk to you soon. What's going on, guys? John Anthony, the Million Dollar Man, riding with you guys on Chair Shot Sports. Riding solo in the big chair. The mic is off this week. We're out here talking wrestling, talking NFL. One of the biggest things going on right now is the MLB playoffs. Whether it's AL or NL, wherever your team is, it's a good time to be a baseball fan. Over in the AL right now, you have the Boston Red Sox, who took down the Tampa Bay Rays. to advance over the ALCS. They're taking on the Houston Astros, who beat down the Chicago White Sox. You flip over the NL, you have the LA Dodgers, who took out the San Francisco Giants, taking on the Atlanta Braves, who sent home the Milwaukee Brewers. It's good. I mean, wherever you look at that and you see that, I think it's going to be great. Personally, as being a Sox fan, I can really see the Sox running it back with the Dodgers into the World Series. I think it'd be amazing. A lot of storylines there. Obviously, now with Alex Cora having served his year suspension out of coaching, coming back, kind of running it back against the old teams that he had to beat with the quote-unquote cheating, and has beat them all now without it. Going all the way up against the Dodgers and beating them quote-unquote clean, I think would be amazing and really put a feather in his cap. Also, in the NL side, I mean, it's great. I mean, Mookie Betts going from the Sox to the Dodgers. If they do beat the Braves, they come all the way back. Now it's the Mookie Red Sox narrative. You're talking about that for a couple, at least a week up until the actual World Series. And that's an underlying tone every at bat, every single time he makes a catch, hits a ball, gets an out. It's always going to be the narrative of something they talk about. So I really see that something means that, I'm sure that's something that Fox wants, something that the media wants, but I also wouldn't mind seeing the Braves get in as well. Long playoff lineage in baseball playoffs, and would love to see them get back to the series and have a shot for it. Personally, I really see the Sox taking down Houston. It's probably going to be about 6 games. Yes, does Houston have a prolific hitting lineup? Yes, but Boston also has its own murderer's row, and they can take down any pitching staff at any time, and it's something that the Sox don't shy away from, or something that they bat an eye at. So, but talking about all that, let's just talk about how the Sox got here. Okay, I've been a Red Sox fan since I came out the womb, right before the afterbirth. And growing up, it's always been a very polarizing city. It's literally not even a Johnny come lately or what have you done for me lately. It's an everyday, what did you do last night? You could win 12 straight in Boston as a Red Sox. Win 12 straight. You lose that 13th one, and all of a sudden you're a bunch of bums. Let's blow it up. Send everyone home. Trade everybody. It's over. Close the doors. Turn out the lights. Party's over. But this year I think is particularly something that sticks in my craw, because my biggest problem is when I love a team, I love them through thick and thin. Win or loss, good or bad, it's like a marriage. If you have a sports team, that's literally your marriage. That's the person you're taking on. No matter what happens, you love them. Doesn't matter. Good or bad, whether they make you happy, let you down, don't do the best, do the best job. Either way, you love them unconditionally. Thus, like, my really big hatred for people who love two teams. I feel like it's great. You have your wife over here, but you have your mistress. So when your wife's acting up and nothing's really going well, you can just turn around and look at your mistress, and she's doing great. And you can still sit there and pound your chest and pat yourself on the back and, hey, they're doing awesome. You really need to just have one team, that one person, that one team who is just your love. And for me, that's the Boston Red Sox. Before this season even started, a lot of people were already discounting the Sox. And I get that. It's a quote-unquote bridge year. Bloom comes in from the Rays. He's picking up pieces here and there. You got the Kike Hernandez, the Hunter Renfros, things like that. He's building his bullpen. He's piece by piece getting all these other guys. And everyone's like, yeah, cool. Okay, well, they'll be competitive, I guess, but they really can't go far in the playoffs. Coming out, I think, into opening day, the Sox were maybe bet to win a maximum of 75 games. Then, of course, they come out, they get swept by the Orioles Easter weekend. A lot of people literally already mailed it in, sold them out. I'm done. This isn't the year I'm watching baseball. Lo and behold, 2-3 months go by. Now, all of a sudden, they're first in the AL East by a sizable amount, at least 5, 6, 7 games. I believe 8 games was the most they had up. The Yankees were just crashing to the ground. The Rays couldn't figure it out. Toronto was okay. They couldn't figure it out either. Then the All-Star break came, which is like literally been something for the Red Sox. I feel like for a lot of other teams too, for years, you get the layoff, you know, you get the recharge, you come back out. It's just not the same. It's almost like restart. It's like shutting off your car, parking it, waiting for a while, coming back, and it's in the cold. You restart it. It's cold. The car is cold. The engine is cold. You got to get it revved up again. So the Sox, they took a dive. The Yankees got hot. The Blue Jays got hot. The Sox are losing to all the teams that they shouldn't be losing to, which is unfortunate to watch. But like I said, you stick through thin and thin. You don't falter. You don't go anywhere. Fast forward to the end of the season. Comes down, obviously, we could have had a three-way tie for the AL wild card. Sox go on. They sweep the Nationals. Win the wild card. But before we get to anything happened after they won the wild card, you have to understand, people were still poo-pooing this team all the way up into the last game of the season. I've never seen anywhere else, and I mean, I was born in Brooklyn. I know Yankees fans. Yankees have gotten beaten senseless for years, ever since having their dominance of the 90s. No Yankee fan is selling it in, throwing their hat out, burning their jerseys in the fireplace. They're not. They literally are doing what we did for years here. For years. Maybe next year. The phrase that so many teams around the country murmur when the end of September, beginning of October rolls around. Maybe next year. And New England, you guys are spoiled brats. I'll admit it. I live in New England. I'm from New York. Not a Jets or a Giants fan. God help any of you that are. Okay, I'm a Sox fan. I'm a Bruins fan. I love my Nets and I love my San Francisco 49ers. Okay. I'm not a Pats hater. Don't hate them. They're a great team. They've won a lot of championships. They've done great under Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Done a lot of good things, and that's awesome. I don't hate on them. My team is in the NFC. What happens with the AFC and the Pats has never had anything to do with me. My problem has been with the Packers and with everybody else over on the other side. But my biggest thing is I've never seen a fan base. I'm pretty sure, unless you're Dallas, I think Dallas is the one team I can say with the fan base that they kind of turn on them and run to another team. New Englanders are so quick to turn on the teams they cheer for. Case in point, New England Patriots. I just talked about them, right? Prolific, prolific run. Never to be duplicated again anywhere, anytime in sports, right? Your quarterback, Tom Brady, if you're a New England Patriots fan, takes himself down to Tampa Bay. What happens? You guys literally go and buy Tom Brady Tampa Bay jerseys. What? That's unheard of. He literally is going to an opposite team. Yeah, he's in the NFC. That's cute if that's the excuse you want to use. But you don't follow somebody to the enemy. You don't follow another player to another team. You get behind who was there. And don't get me started. I think me and Mike touched on it here or there in a couple episodes as far as the issues I think everyone up here had with Cam Newton. Okay. But you get behind, you rally behind the new quarterback. That's what you do. You know what I mean? You don't just run and go to another team and then throw that quarterback's jersey on and be like, oh, I've been a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan for so long. I love Tom Brady. No, that's not how this works. You got to take everyone else. You guys hate Antonio Brown. He's down there. You guys hate when Leonard Fournette would talk all this junk when he was a Jaguar and he played the Pats and talked all this junk to you guys. Guess what? He's down there. Mike Evans, not a huge Pats fan. Guess what? He's on the Bucks too. Oh, and he took Gronk with him? That's cute, I guess. But, I mean, it's one of those things where clearly some of these guys are chasing rings. They just want a championship. They want to be able to slide one on their finger. And guess what? They were able to do that last year. But I digress. Back to Pats fans. Back to Sox fans when talking about Pats fans. So, Sox ended up being one of the fourth best team in the AL. Ended up getting 92 wins. Probably 20 more than anyone else had them winning here in this region. Probably in a lot of other places in the country, okay? We have the only fan base that literally is complaining that they won the wild card and are betting against them in the one-game playoff against the Yankees. There's no team I can even think of or fathom that would, when your team gets into a one-game playoff, all you have to do is win one and you go into the playoffs, that you bet or think ill against your team and hope and say the other team is going to win. It's ridiculous. The Sox have had this chip on their shoulder and this mantra since spring training, and Cora being the one of the goats of the managers, okay? He has instilled in this team, them, to know that they're great. And they know they're great in that clubhouse, in that park, in that organization. Everyone outside of that thinks you're trash, thinks you're no good. You're not going anywhere. You're not going to do anything. And it was Cora that led this team to knowing how good they were to go on that field and show everyone how good they were. Did they falter sometimes? Absolutely. Was this year a roller coaster? No doubt. Crazy. You're riding high in the AL East 1 week, 2 weeks later, you're fighting for a wild card. Hope you can at least get in on the second one and go to someone's house and try to get in. But at no point does this city or this town or this region buy in to the Boston Red Sox and put that faith behind them. You know when they have that faith? When they're in the ALCS. You're going to start seeing the green Boston hats pop out. You're going to see seeing the old Mo Vaughn jerseys and the Garcia Parra jerseys pop up. You know why all those old jerseys? Because no one nowadays has enough faith in the team to buy the new jerseys or thinks they'll go far enough and it's not worth that to spend that money and get that kind of jersey. But they've done great. The ALCS starts in a couple days. I think the Sox, I got the Sox in six. I know Houston's great. They're awesome. I think if they can split in Houston, after seeing what they did to Tampa Bay coming back to the Fens, I really think, depending how the pitching matchups, how the rotation matches up with some pitching matchups for Houston, Houston doesn't exactly have the best pitching lineup. Their offense carries them, kind of a la the Red Sox. I think they can sweep at the Fens. And I mean, if they sweep at the Fens and they split in Houston, we're not going back to Houston. They had Sox in five. I won't be that cocky enough and that stupid enough to think that Houston isn't going to win one in Boston. So I can see them going back 3-2 to Houston and Houston having that pressure to win two straight games, whether it be in their house or not. I don't think the Sox really care either way with that kind of pressure if they're in Fenway, if they're in Houston. Doesn't matter. If you're in a ballpark and there's a pitch being thrown, the Sox are going to knock it out of that park. Doesn't matter where they are. But I think that's good. I mean, they got a shot. I mean, they're 8 wins away from the series. It'd be great. You love to see it. It's a feel-good story. And the greatest thing is, too, with this team, if they go on and they happen to win the World Series, this is supposed to be a bridge year. So now you're telling me you're taking this team, who you kind of quote-unquote pieced together, Hunter Renfro being $3 million, and this guy's going off, going crazy. Kiki Hernandez, who you stole from the Dodgers for on the cheap. You got a lot of other guys. You got Devers. You got Bogarts. You got a lot of guys. J.D. Martinez has had an okay year. I guess maybe if he pops off in the playoffs, he might start talking about his opt-out again. But if you had to ask me, I think he's going to spend his entire career. I think the opt-out is not a bluff or really a call-out, but I think it's something where JD's like, hey, I'm open to it. And other teams might give a couple phone calls to his agent. But really, if you're JD Martinez, you're not getting any younger. You got a nice, comfortable DH spot here in Boston. He does well for what it is. His swing works well with the wall. So, he might not be just dingers every year or every game, but at least he's getting doubles, he's getting on base, and the average is staying up. I think this is probably the best situation for him. In between the lineup that he's in, when those guys are hot, he's going to see great pitches, and instead of being a big fish in a little bitty pond, stay here in Boston, be part of the tradition, be part of the winning, and yeah, maybe you're not the biggest star here, okay? Maybe it's a Devers, maybe it's somebody else, but you're one of the stars on a championship team. That could be perennial and be there every year. So it's going to be interesting. We'll talk more about it as the ALCS goes on, as we get deeper into the MLB playoffs. So we've covered wrestling, we've covered football, we've talked a little bit about the basketball. One of the biggest things going on right now is in wrestling is obviously two things. One, the King of the Ring tournament has returned. Also, the new incumbent Queen's Crown tournament, and one of the bigger shows going on toward the end of the year is Crown Jewel. So with all that going on, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to cover the tourney lineups, who's in, who's out as of right now. And we'll also talk about the card for Crown Jewel. We'll talk about that right when we come back. What's going on, guys? John Anthony back with you on here on Cherish Trash Sports. Running solo, the mic is out in some theatrical and some movie Hollywood deals. Hopefully he's back with us next week or the week after so we can have him join us back here in the studio. So for right now, it's just the boy, John Anthony, sitting here talking wrestling, baseball, football, everything in between. So right now, let's tread right back over to the wrestling front. One of the bigger pay-per-views coming up toward the end of the year right now is Crown Jewel. Crown Jewel is not just big for the six or seven matches that they're going to put on, which are obviously going to be pretty big because seeing as that card is put together by the people in Saudi Arabia and the people they kind of want to see take on each other. But one of the biggest things going on right now is the finals of the King of the Ring tournament and of the Queen's Crown are going to happen at that pay-per-view as well. So before we get into the actual matches of Crown Jewel, I want to talk about those tournaments for a minute. So as it stands right now, as of this recording right now, so the King of the Ring tournament, we have in the semifinals, you have Sami Zayn going against Finn Balor. On the other side of that, you have Jinder Mahal and Xavier Woods. This is an interesting bracket. This is one of those things where three of the four of those guys, I mean, you could even probably see Zayn going on a crazy King run and that whole gimmick, you know, lasting probably longer than whatever Baron Corbin did. But out of those four, if you had asked me, I mean, Xavier is one of my, guilty pleasure picks. I want to see him complete the trifecta and get his shot at the WWE Championship. And that way, every member of the New Day holds the belt. I mean, it's a pipe dream and a guilty pleasure. It's probably something that won't happen now in this tournament, but Xavier has paid his dues. He's a yes man. He toes the line, and I can see definitely something down the road. Probably, you know, not immediate, but more so something when we don't even think about it, him coming out and winning that title and getting a shot, and all three of those guys holding the belt and, you know, kind of, you know, being good soldiers, getting together in that group and just persevering. And really being top faces when they needed it and being that comic relief when things were kind of looking kind of bad on, you know, a show or a program. And they came out kind of livened everything up and got everyone back on the same page. So right now, out of those four, I would have to say my pick has got to be, it's got to be Jinder. It's like it or not, say what you want, fight me, talk to me on Facebook about it. Jinder Mahal had a very, very, very good run. He didn't defend it. He defended it a lot, but he was never in the actual main event of a lot of pay-per-views. He was like undercarded defending that. And I get him being champion, it brings in India, it brings in a lot of other eyes, a lot of faces, a lot of interest. But I think overall, his wrestling tactic, his ability on the mic, he has kind of the total package, really brings a lot to the table, and him holding that belt really makes a lot of sense for the company right now, for where they're at. Finn Balor really doesn't need to win the tournament. I feel like Sammy is one of those names that's thrown in there as a wild card. You know, like, ooh, Sammy could win it. You know, you never know, up to his little tricks and you know, ends up winning something. Xavier, like I said, I don't think his time is yet, but it's definitely sometime down the road where he could win that and definitely, like I said, be the trifecta out of the three of those guys and everyone could win a championship. So on the flip side of that, if you look at the inaugural Queen's Crown brackets, Right now, your semifinals are shaping up to be Selena Vega versus Carmella. And you also have Doudrop and Shayna Baszler. Now, my pick, first of all, I was ecstatic and excited, running through the streets naked, proclaiming, like Paul Revere style, the fact that Charlotte was not involved in the Queen's Crown tournament. If she was, literally, why even have the tournament? We obviously all know who's going to win this. And WWE execs and creative were smart enough to know not to put her into it, which is great. Right now, out of the four of those, I gotta, you know, I want to say it's going to be Baszler. She finally broke away from Nia Jax, getting the single push, you know, inflicting pain on other wrestlers, putting women on the sidelines, and just being that force that she was supposed to be when she first debuted with WWE. Definitely got soft, definitely just kind of became a backseat and a coattail kind of person, Nia Jax. Not that she needed it, but that's just kind of how it rolled. Like I said, so with that being said, I want someone like Baszler to win it. I don't think they're stupid enough to go with Carmella. You know, I get she's a heel. I don't really think right now you need her having white hot uber heel heat. You have Sonya Deville for that. A couple other people that can really pull off that moniker. I really don't think you need to give her that belt. I mean, I should say that title. But part of me just feels like they're going to give this to Doudrop. Don't ask me why. I just feel like Doudrop coming over, doing the whole thing with Eva Marie and just paying her dues. I don't know. I just have this weird feeling, just like when we talked about Money in the Bank. And I was like, well, I get this really weird feeling that Nikki A.S.H. is going to win the Money in the Bank. Like, as your sleeper and not your actual pick, I really feel like Doudrop is someone's going to come out, and it's going to be like Carmella and Doudrop that go for it. And obviously, you're going to sit here and go, Carmella all day, every day. Obviously, she's going to win it. And then someone like Doudrop comes out, and boom, they're the next Queen's Crown. They're the first Queen's Crown winner. So that's going to be interesting to see when we get together next week. Obviously, the finals should be set and lined up, so we can talk about those. If it's not before then obviously we can just talk about it. We can just talk about that when we talk about the Crown Jewel results. So speaking of Crown Jewel, the matches that are announced right now, I think we talked about it when we were going to Extreme Rules. I'm pretty sure that Vince has now figured out the less is more is better. So we don't have to have 19 matches, each one being 6 minutes long. Let's have 6 or 7 matches. I guess throw one on to the pre-show if you need to. Have those matches be 15, 20, 25 minutes long. Makes sense. Probably a la AEW, where they have the 30-minute time limit. Those matches go kind of all the way to the bell. Tell the story and gets the crowd into it, the back and forths, the false pins, 1-2s, all that good stuff, and everyone getting invested and liking it. So we'll just start, at the, I guess, quote unquote top, however they're listed. A lot of these matches are top tier. This is really shaping up to be a great pay-per-view card. I just feel like the endings are kind of predictable. You kind of see where they're going with these. They're not really setting anything up for Survivor Series. Survivor Series is going to be its own entity with the champion versus champion aspect of it that they do pretty much every year. So one of the first matches, we have Seth Rollins versus Edge. And that, of course, was announced a week and a half ago. It's going to be those two in Hell in a Cell. Me and Mike have talked about this. Hell in a Cell used to mean something. It became its own pay-per-view, and you were literally just throwing people into a cell and to fight just because you couldn't get out. It was cool, I guess. That made sense in someone's mind. The Hell in a Cell was supposed to be the end-all, be-all. You did this, you did that. There's no other way for me to really get to you. There's no way for me to, you to get to me to get to you. Too many people interfering, all these other things, outside problems. Let's do this. Let's drop the Hell in a Cell. Let's get it on. Let's find out who the true person is. Obviously, these guys are getting split up. Rollins and Edge, are going both to Raw. but I really see my separation. Like, this feud is definitely going to be over. I think this is something where whoever goes over, I personally feel like I have Edge. I think this is something he needs in like the twilight of his career. Rollins has a lot more wins in him, a lot more programs, and a lot of other opportunities to really use people as stepping stones. Edge is not a stepping stone. And there's no shame if you're Seth Rollins and losing to Edge. Edge is, like I said, in the twilight, doesn't have a lot of matches left. So him going over here, and I'm sure it's going to be a brutal battle, a lot of big spots. I'm sure there will be blood. A lot of, you know, guys getting beat up, thrown around. It's going to be a heck of a match. But I really see Edge coming out as a victor in this, going over, kind of, quote-unquote, winning the rivalry. And who's to say, you know, in another 6 months to a year, him and Rollins' path don't cross again. You never know. That's kind of what WWE does best. But for right now with this feud, I think you have Edge going over and kind of closing out that chapter of the feud. Second match, we have Goldberg versus Lashley. This, hands down, I'm going to tell you that Bill Goldberg is going to win this match. Whether you're a fan or not, listen, I'm a huge fan of the Almighty. I think Lashley, even though he dropped the belt to Big E, I think that they're still continuing with this Almighty, making him a powerhouse, making him relevant, making him look unbeatable and untouchable to the rest of the roster. You don't have to carry the belt to still be one of the most feared guys on the roster or in the locker room. All right, and they're doing one of those right now with Bobby. Bobby, again, 42 years old, doesn't have 15, 20 years in front of him. Definitely has more, you know, more than a few. He's in great shape. He's great. He must have been doing tutoring or learning from MVP, because he has gotten so much better on that stick, on that mic, and just beating dudes up with it before they even get in the match. It's been phenomenal. It's been great to see, great to hear, and great to watch. It's awesome. But also, on the flip side, you have Goldberg. Goldberg, this is his last match in his new 2-year deal he signed with WWE. If I was a betting man, I would have to say that this is the swan song. This is it. Relevancy-wise, in an actual program building up to a match, I think this is the last match you're going to see Bill Goldberg in a WWE ring. I think the next step after this is enshrinement and being entered into the Hall of Fame, entering that Legends contract, and just being like that figurehead. If they need it, if the name's brought up, having him drop in, you know, for maybe a weekly rating, maybe make an appearance at the pay-per-view, do something, you know, kind of wild. But I think this is kind of the end of, you know, Goldberg's actual in-ring career. The guy's 46. I mean, he's signed 3 deals with WWE already. The programs have been okay. He had, you know, obviously that rough match with Taker a couple years back, which really paid him in a bad light. But he's not a horrible worker. I think with Lashley, Lashley's going to carry that match. There's going to be some big spots, a lot of spears. You can see a jackhammer. Lashley's probably going to, you know, put the Hurt Lock on him. Goldberg will break out. I'm sure at some point his son Gage will get interfered or interfere somewhere outside, distract Lashley. Let's Goldberg hit the spear. 1, 2, 3. And let him engage, you know, walk up the ramp, you know, victorious and off into the sunset. That's what I have for that match. One of the better matches of the night, I think, that's going to really surprise and might just steal the show, is going to be your Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, and Bianca Belair match. These three women can ball out. They are amazing. They've done leaps and bounds for the women's division. They are awesome in the ring. All three have gotten better on the mic as well. And Bianca's okay, but with Bianca and Sasha, okay, but what Becky can do, she can definitely carry the other two of those. And I feel like all three women are just going to be feeding off of each other, also in the moment, triple threat. I can't see, I really couldn't see the belt moving, but then when the draft came and all these people are moving on left and right, as more of like an answer for the belts being in different spots, I can see with Becky leaving, I can see Sasha winning the belt, keeping it where it is. And then her and Sasha can switch the belts. I'm sorry, Charlotte and Sasha can switch the belts. But I can see Becky kind of getting shipped out of town without her belt, going over to Raw, having a good time, and then Sasha just kind of keeping that, holding it down SmackDown. But that match, I think, is going to be a banger. Bianca can ball out. She's amazing off the top ropes, in the ring, on the outside. She's great. I think it's going to be really good. The tag titles are on the line with RK-Bro. Once again, with AJ and Omos. I'm picking RK-Bro here. I think it's really not the time yet to take the belts off of them. Kind of let them still kind of ride this, get into the WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, Road 2 kind of thing going on. Let them hold it for a good amount of time. I feel like after this program, you're going to see Randy, once the Royal Rumble comes around, jump back into the title picture for the WWE Championship over on Raw. I know there's a lot of talk internally with AJ and Omos. When the draft came, they were going to split those guys up. Omos internally, I guess, isn't looked upon as someone who can actually kind of be a singles guy yet, which might spell disaster for RK-Bro, because it might just mean, okay, hey, let's get the belt on these guys. They win it this month. They'll hold it till Mania. You might just be looking at something like, RK-Bro and, AJ and, Omos and maybe like two other teams, some kind of fatal four-way tag team turmoil kind of thing going on to take the belt off of them. So, but I got RK-Bro going over here. I think it's what it's really need to do right now for the current product, what people like, and I think it's the best way to go. So, one of two championship matches that we have on the docket is Drew McIntyre versus Big E. In my opinion, this is something that's forced. Low-key, Drew's becoming the Charlotte Flair of the men's division. Charlotte, God love her. I know a lot of people do, but, and I've said this before. It was said on TV by Bianca, but by Alexa. What does Charlotte do when she's not in a title picture or has the title belt? Nothing. She literally doesn't get into any of the feuds. She's off of TV for weeks, and then she pops back up when it was either an A open challenge, someone gets hurt, or it's time for her to just take the belt off of somebody. So I feel like McIntyre's kind of falling into that same realm. Whereas he's kind of, he's obviously drafted over to SmackDown. I'm sure the matches of him and Reigns are coming. But to be thrust into a heavy match literally like a week before you, like a day before you get sent over to another brand. If you really think Big E's dropping that belt to McIntyre, I got a bridge I can sell you over in New York. That might be worth you taking a look at. So, Big E's going over in this one, retaining as he should and carrying that belt deep into the WrestleMania year. And I'm sure what will be the main event, you have your tribal chief, Roman Reigns, going against Brock Lesnar. All the teasers, all the arrows, everything are pointing you in the wrong direction. If you're buying into this whole thing with Lesnar playing both sides, you have another thing coming. You are literally eating into the hands of Vince and WWE. And if you don't have Peacock, you're donking up some serious money to see it happen. The fact that Brock is literally the one that keeps throwing out the name of Heyman all the time over at Reigns to put that like seed of doubt. I'm telling you, that's not how it's going down. Lesnar's playing the game. He's getting ahead of Roman Reigns, which is probably one of the only ways to get into to defeat Roman Reigns is to get into his head, because physically in a match in that ring, nobody's touching him. No one's even close. So the mind games do continue. But if you're buying into that, yeah, don't think there's a lot of hope for you. But Reigns is definitely going over in that match. Definitely get a retain, and we're going to see who walks down that ramp after he puts the 1-2-3 down on him in Saudi Arabia. So, all right. So with that talked about, being on a Thursday, going back to Sundays, is NFL football. We got week 5 coming up. So what we'll do is take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about our week 5 predictions for the NFL. Hey guys, how we doing? Johnny Anthony back with you on Chair Shot Sports. Riding solo in the big chair. The mic is out on some contractual obligations in Hollywood and theatrically, so we wish him the best. Hopefully we see him back here in a couple weeks. So we've covered a lot of things. We've covered the Red Sox and MLB. We've covered extreme rules that happened a couple weeks ago. We've covered the NFL last week. Well, talking about one of the most important parts of the NFL is this upcoming Sunday. A lot of good matchups, a lot of good things coming up. We're excited. So it should be a lot of fun. A lot of good teams going one-on-one. It's one of those weeks where I feel like a lot of teams could get, you know, it's one of those make or break kind of things. You got teams that could go 0-5, could go 1-4, or 1-5, might not be able to make it, you know, or dig themselves out of that hole. And there's a lot of other teams that could be 4-1, 5-0 for the Arizona Cardinals, 3-2. Teams are trying to get that extra win and pad that lead going into, you know, getting closer and closer to the second half of the season. So, all right, so let's start at the top. On Thursday night, we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going against the Eagles. I got to go with Tommy B. You can't go against Tom, man. I don't think any time this year I'm ever going to go against TB12. They've brought back the entire team. They look awesome. They're like a well-oiled machine. When they're down, they're not out. When they're down and out, they're still not down and out. You can't count them out until there's triple zeros on that board. And the confetti's falling, you're able to claim a win. Until then, Tom always has a shot and always finds a way to win. One of the first early games is the Dolphins and the Jags. This one's actually be taking over in London. So for all you guys that sleep in, you might want to get up and set your lineups if you play fantasy football like I do. This game is going to kick off around 9:30 a.m. in the States, Eastern Time. You get the Dolphins and the Jags. This is a rough game to watch even if you're across the pond, man, you gotta watch this game. This might be the game where the Jags finally find that first win, finally get off the schneid, and finally are able to encompass one, put it in the bank, and build off of it. Trevor Lawrence needs it. Urban Meyer needs it. I think the whole franchise as a whole needs that right now. To move forward and kind of get a more of a winning culture in that locker room. Bengals and Detroit, they're up next. Detroit, I hate to every week say they're going to lose. And I hate to go against Joe Burrow. But you know what? I really think this might be the week that Detroit gets it. They're at home. They were close last week. They got the mojo going. I know Cincinnati's favored to win. But you know what? The Lions, they're due. Every week it's going to be due. From now until, you know, the playoffs, they're due. And until they get that win, they will be due. So hopefully this is the week. I have them going over. Not by much, but I have them beating Cincinnati. The Chiefs and the Washington football team are next. This is a really weird game because I really didn't think I'd ever see the Chiefs and the Washington football team walking into the game with the same record of 2-3. This is weird. Kansas City is in a mode right now. In the circles I run in when we talk about these kind of things on sports and other stuff, I think this is something that Mahomes needs. I think he needs to have a season where he gets punched in the mouth. You know, these games don't come easy. You're not winning by 35 points. You got to scratch. You got to claw. You got to earn it. A lot of teams, they know how good you are. You know, a team like a Washington football team, or another team another couple weeks from now, you could be their Super Bowl. They know they're not going to make the playoffs. They're not even going to sniff contention. But beating you is the feather in their cap and something they can put on their bulletin board in their locker room that they beat you, being the Super Bowl champs or former champs, and going to the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. But in taking you down, that's something you can put on a bulletin board and use as material and use as motivation for a team to get better and use as a stepping stone. The wonderful and beautiful Houston Texans are taking on the Colts. Again, another weird game. Both teams are 1-4. I know Indy's favored to win, but again, they're at home. You get those points. Definitely not really going to say Houston is in any position to really run with a game and win it. The Colts aren't exactly, you know, setting the world on fire either, but the Colts definitely, out of the two, probably have more of a put-together team, more of a set foundation in place, so I got to go with Indy on that. Then we have the Los Angeles Rams heading over to New York to face the Giants. This is a no-brainer. Rams by a lot to a little. It sucks because the Giants every year come out with a really, like, you know, formidable team. Not saying they're going to go undefeated, you know, or really run the gauntlet and be a powerhouse, but they definitely have a talent-filled team, and it just seems they never get off the schneid, and they always have injuries. The injury bug is always biting all these guys in the ass. It sucks, but this year is no different than a lot of other ones, so the Rams are going in there, they're taking it, and they're going 5-1. While we're staying on the West Coast, talk about Los Angeles. Los Angeles Chargers are also traveling over to Baltimore. This is a tough game, honestly. The Chargers, the Ravens, both teams are riding high. The Ravens, Jackson, I think he's coming into his own this year. He's looking great. Not just the running aspect of it, but the passing, the team's rallying around him. He obviously hears the chatter. He hears the talk about the criticism of him just being a glorified running back that goes under center. I think he finally is starting to find his legs under him, literally and figuratively. And I think the rest of the team is following suit and really helping him get where he needs to go. I got to go with Baltimore on this. They're going to walk away being 5-1, really put themselves in a good position heading into the midway point of the season. Green Bay, the Packers going against the Chicago Bears. This is a weird game. I feel like this is going to be a fluky game. I feel like one or two plays late in the fourth quarter could kind of throw this game into a tailspin of who you have picked or what the spread is. Packers, obviously, Aaron Rodgers. You know, after week one, everyone's like, what are you doing? And then now they're 4-1. And, you know, they're looking to be a powerhouse in the NFC and looking to get themselves back to the NFC Championship game. The Bears, I mean, you really can't get as bad as Fields was 2 weeks ago, so I don't think they will. So this is going to have to be my upset special of the week. I got to go with Chicago. Obviously, I'm not doing spreads. I'm not doing points. I'm just taking the Bears straight out. I think they're going to eke one out. They're going to take Aaron Rodgers down to the limit, and I think they're going to do something where they're going to end up taking them in the final seconds and pull out a win and kind of shock Green Bay. So I got Chicago going over the Packers. The Vikings are then traveling over to Carolina, taking on the Cardiac Cats, the Carolina Panthers. McCaffrey going on the IR, for another couple weeks is a tough blow. That's really one of the things I was waiting to hear when I made my pick for this game. I think the Vikings finally get Thielen back in the game. They get that offense rolling, get some more rhythm to them, and I think they finally find their identity, get going, and the Vikings come out with a win here, go to 500, and kind of start making that push, turn that corner to the halfway point. Big game here. This is a big game. Arizona Cardinals versus the Cleveland Browns. If the Mike was here, he'd be pissing himself talking about how great the Arizona Cardinals are. This is his second favorite team after the Patriots. Cardinals, you know what? I'm not taking the cheese yet. And I'm not saying this because, you know, the Mike's my co-host and I'm doing it to razz him. I'm not taking the cheese on them yet. Yes, they beat my Niners and I'm not being bitter about it. But I don't know if I'm sold. I know they're 5-0 and I get it. They're the only undefeated team left in the NFL. Great. Kudos to you. No one gives you a trophy for being 5-0. Nobody gives you a banner. No one gives you a ring for being 5-0. Okay? So with some of the teams they played, a little lackluster, not the greatest. Yes, my Niners included, with a quarterback in his first start. You know, and not for nothing, the Niners only lost by 7. So I think if you get the right Baker Mayfield to show up, and they are playing in Cleveland, this is a big game for Cleveland. They're getting up for it. You might see a big performance from Odell Beckham. So I'm not saying it's the upset special, but I do see Cleveland making this close and possibly taking it over. So I'm going to take Cleveland by a few to be the first L in on Arizona's list for this year. After that, if we're getting to the late games, we got the Las Vegas Raiders taking on the Denver Broncos. I mean, this is tough. I mean, I got to go with Denver only because I could not even tell you or start to imagine what it looks like right now in that Vegas locker room if you're a Raider. You know, you got a lot of stuff going on. You just lost your head coach. Not for nothing, the comments that were made by your ex-head coach. I'm not saying it's dividing a locker room. I can see these guys coming together, definitely being one team, going out there representing. It could be one of those things where it's a make or break. It could be something where they're like, man, this sucks. Like, what are we doing? Or they can come together and be like, you know what? If it's a resounding, like, F this guy kind of mantra, these guys all get together and get behind it. They go out there and maybe, you know, win a couple more games than they should, and maybe they find themselves deep in the playoffs in the AFC. But I got to go with Denver on this. Plus, they're in Denver. The Broncos are looking for it. They're 3-2. They go to 4-2, avoid being 500, and start building on moving toward the halfway point and on past that. One of the later games is going to be before Sunday Night Football is going to be your Dallas Cowboys, America's team, versus your New England Patriots. Dallas all day. Dallas is going to blow doors. And I say this again because I have to put a precursor of, I'm not saying this because I'm not a Pats fan. Sorry, Mike, but I mean, the Pats are 2-3. You do have Mac Jones, and you are going against them boys. But not for nothing. Dak looks amazing. Zeke looks great. You got CeCe Lamb out there. You got a lot of guys out there catching the ball. A lot of guys out there like making plays happen. And not for nothing, Dak is just making it happen himself. Zeke is putting that team on his back. They know what they have. They're 4-1. When you have a start like that, you got to keep it rolling. You got to keep pushing it, especially in the NFC. The NFC can get tight down the road. Do you want to take any win you can get, especially against a weaker team like New England Patriots? So I got Dallas going over in that one. Your Sunday night game is going to be the Seattle Seahawks versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, everyone here at Cherry Shot Sports, myself and the Mike, we all wish a very big get well soon to Russell Wilson. Crappy injury, really, you hate to see it. The guy's never missed a game. Trying to be in the Iron Man, it sucks. He just can't go. It stinks. But in lieu of that, I got to go with being in Pittsburgh and being Pittsburgh. I hate Ben Roethlisberger, first of all, for the record. I hate picking anything with him. And trust me, I would hate to pick the Seahawks with them being in the same division as the Niners. But the way the Hawks have been rolling, Carson's out too. He's on the IR. They don't have the pieces. They don't have enough to build up stack up enough against them. I got to go with Pittsburgh winning this one. Running away. And then your Monday night special, you got the Buffalo Bills traveling down to Tennessee, taking on the Titans. This is actually could be a sneaky good game. A very sneaky good game. The Bills are sitting at 4-1, Titans are over here at 3-2. The Titans got a shot here to kind of even the playing field. They can eat this out and they can win it. Both teams are sitting at 4-2. You're getting that leverage moving into playoffs if you're looking for, like, you know, seeding and things like that if records end up being the same. So, but yeah, no, it's going to be an interesting week. Everything's looking great. I'm excited. It's going to be a good week. And yeah, everything's exciting up until Monday night, so it'll be fun. So if you get your fantasy lineups, remember, tomorrow you're gonna want to be up before 9:30. If you haven't playing on the early game over in London, get those lineups set up. So that's pretty much all I got for this week. We've covered all we could. I'm sure there's a couple things we missed. We'll try to do better and get more next time. Next week is a big episode for us. We got our NBA and NHL preview show. By the time we get together and talk, the season will already started. We'll definitely talk about our top five teams that we have out in the East and the West, and also in the NHL. We'll talk about who the power players are going into the new season. So, yeah, we'll also talk about the Boston Red Sox and their journey in the ALCS. We'll obviously talk about Week 6, what happened, and we'll look ahead to Week 7 as well, talk about that. And if not, one of the bigger things that we talked about, that we touched on this week, the Crown Jewel results, and also talking about the King of the Ring and the Queen's Crown results as well. So, yeah, so I mean, that's pretty much it. So, with that said, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. Go Red Sox. Hopefully we go out there, we crush Houston, we bring that back to Boston, and get us out there to the World Series. So, for Cherry Shot Sports and the Mike, I'm John Anthony, and we will talk to you guys soon. Have a good one.